This is Southern FM 88.3.
Welcome to The Space Show, presented by members of the Space Association of Australia. Hello, I am Andrew Rennie, and on Mission Control we have Jay. On this evening's The Space Show, the New Horizons spacecraft has flown past the Kuiper Belt object Ultima Thule. We have the results directly from Mission Control in Laurel, Maryland. And so, let's go to the outer solar system. Now, our solar system has six main regions. The Sun, which forms the bulk of the solar system. The terrestrial planets, Mercury, Venus, Earth, and Mars, sort of like pebbles. The asteroid belt, most of whose members orbit between Mars and Jupiter, a bit like sand or dust. The gas giants, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune. The fifth region is the Kuiper Belt. Now, this lies beyond the orbit of Neptune. Its most famous member is Pluto. Other members range in size from Pluto down to tens of meters. And finally, there's the Oort cloud, which extends beyond the Kuiper Belt out as far as one light year from the Sun. The Oort cloud is thought to be the origin of most comets. Until the 1990s, the only known Kuiper Belt object was Pluto. In the two decades since, hundreds of these have been found by astronomers. Some are as large as Pluto. Most are several tens of kilometres across. One of these was discovered by Alan Stern and his New Horizons team. It is catalogued as 2014 MU69. After a public naming contest, it is unofficially, nicknamed Ultima Thule. On New Year's Day, the New Horizons swept past Ultima Thule, some 1.5 billion kilometres past Pluto. In our Christmas Eve program, we pointed out one puzzle about Ultima Thule. Why did it not appear to change in brightness as it rotated? This question was resolved when we saw that Ultima Thule is a binary. That is, two spherical bodies touching each other. Hal Weaver explains what happens.
You know, what a difference a day makes. Ultima Thule is finally revealing its secrets to us. And even though it is a pixelated blob still, it's a better pixelated blob than the day before. And in fact, these images that we just got and that we're showing you today have allowed us to resolve something that was really puzzling to the scientists, because we knew that we were pretty certain that it was elongated, highly elongated, and it must be spinning. And in that kind of a situation, you'd expect to see brightness variations. Here's an elongated object, this pin. And as you imagine the camera looking at this pin, when it in this dimension, in this direction, you see a lot of area, and you flip it like this, and you see hardly anything. We expected to see these brightness variations of Ultima Thule over time, and we weren't seeing that. Well, that's because the pole is almost pointing towards the spacecraft, like this. It's almost like a propeller blade that's running around, and that explains everything, basically. There's no change in the brightness because we're always seeing the same side. But there's definitely, brightness. You know, there definitely is a highly elongated shape. So, and we're now working on the, exactly how fast it's spinning. And if you look at this little, once again, we got these pixelated blobs, and the science team is making as much as squeezing as much as we possibly can out of images like this. But from these, even from these images, you can see these are taken about an hour apart. Let me just show you an artist, representation of what's going on here. You see the in one orientation, this first one to the far left, and then about 1 hour later, you see it's moved. The whole thing is rotated in our field of view. And then another hour and a half later, you see it moving again. And that's how we tell what the rotation rate is. But the data are still not quite good enough to be able to tell the difference between a 15-hour period and a 30-hour period. Or, as Alan said, also, we're not positive that, in fact, the two things are actually stuck together like this, two lobes. But we're going to, you know, this will all be revealed either tomorrow or the next day. It's just going to be dramatically different. It'll be a completely, you know, Ultima Thule will be turned into a real world after, you know, you see the images tomorrow.
And that was Hal Weaver talking just after the flyby. And, yeah, we explained why it appears to have a dual spin rate. It's 15 hours approximately. And that spin axis was pointing towards the New Horizons spacecraft pretty much. Well, a press conference was held on January the 3rd to explain the findings. A lot of participants were in it. So let's go to that press conference now.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Laboratory in Laurel, Maryland. I'm Mike Buckley from APL's Office of Communications and Public Affairs. And what a week it has been for exploration. NASA's New Horizons spacecraft conducted the farthest flyby in history, speeding past the Kuiper Belt object nicknamed Ultima Thule. And mission scientists have been making all kinds of discoveries in the images and measurements that New Horizons has been sending back. Now, we've managed to pry some of those scientists away from that data for a little while to give us an update. So with us today is Alan Stern, principal investigator from New Horizons from the Southwest Research Institute, Mark Showalter, New Horizons co-investigator from the SETI Institute, Leslie Young, New Horizons co-investigator from Southwest Research Institute, Sylvia Protopapa, a New Horizons co-investigator from Southwest Research Institute, and Paul Schenk, a New Horizons co-investigator from the Lunar and Planetary Institute. So first we'll start with Dr. Stern.
Thank you, Mike. Well, what a week it has been, indeed. And we're going to make four presentations by my four colleagues to my left on new scientific results for you. But since this is our last opportunity to speak with you during flyby week, I thought I would give a little update on the spacecraft and our status. And then I want to say a little something about the mission and putting what we have done in context. Regarding the spacecraft, New Horizons is now already about 3 million miles deeper into the Kuiper Belt than Ultima Thule. And the spacecraft this morning conducted its last observations of our flyby target and then successfully transitioned out of the flyby command load and is now operating on its first command load of the new year. That command load is already going to be making observations of the deeper environment in the Kuiper Belt and making observations of other KBOs in the distance. Now with that, I'd like to take you back to 2015. You know, we launched New Horizons in 2006 and flew 9.5 years to cross the solar system. And our first target was the king of the Kuiper Belt, the planet Pluto. This is the difference between a planet and a planetesimal. And it's also something that I think viscerally indicates just how much harder it is to navigate to such a much smaller target than Pluto. So with that, having given you this background now and told you where the spacecraft is and what we're doing, I'm going to hand it off to my colleagues. We'll start with Mark Showalter.
Thanks, Alan. I'm here today to talk a little bit about our search for moons of the Ultima Thule system. As you all know by now, there are actually essentially two bodies in the system, Ultima and Thule. So if we've seen now bodies one and two, the question is, well, what about bodies three, four, and five, and so on? I'll give away my answer right now, which is that we have not found any other moons, any bodies in the system beyond the two that you see here. However, we are looking, and we're looking very hard, and we are looking for some very good reasons. We have had in the distant past a swarm of small bodies, and those eventually coalesced into the two bodies, Ultima and Thule, but at the time they were in orbit around one another, around their common center, and over time they came together and touched gently. Now there's a puzzle with that, which is that at the time they touched, they were probably rotating much faster than they are today, probably in 3 or 4 hours rather than the 15 or so hours that we know about today. So how did they slow down? Well, the best way to understand that is if there were another moon or two or three orbiting this system, essentially what those moons would do is put the brakes on the two bodies in the middle, slow them down, and as a result, the small moons would spiral outward a little bit, but not necessarily very far. So we're looking for the objects that put the brakes on this object so that it isn't spinning today as fast as it was originally. Now, that would also be a really important result for us because we don't know and are going to have a very hard time finding out what is the interior of this particular object. We will see the outside just fine, but knowing its mass and knowing its density is the key to understanding its interior. And to get that, the best way to do it is to find an object orbiting these two. So, with that in mind, let me give you an illustration of what we've been doing. And so far, we have not found any dots. But if we did, that would have to correspond to a moon that's about a mile across and about 500 miles away from Ultima Thule itself. We've had another opportunity to just look in a little bit closer recently. It's a, you of course saw the snowman figure, but there's a field of view around that. And when I pump up the contrast on that particular image, what you see is this. And most of those dots are stars. There's a few others that are cosmic ray hits, but we know that and we can recognize that. The reason that you don't see all the stars is that this is a much shorter exposure. But we've examined images, and when we do that, we determined that an object about a few hundred yards across, say the size of a few football fields, would be visible in these images, and nothing has been seen. So, of course, to be in this image, it has to be within about 100 miles or so of Ultima Thule itself. So there's a gap now where we could see things within 100 miles of Ultima Thule. We can see things beyond about 500 miles from Ultima Thule, and there's a gap in between where we have not yet been able to do a thorough search for moons. So that opportunity is coming. We have to be a little bit patient because those images are still in the spacecraft, but within a few weeks, we will be seeing them, and we'll be able to complete our search for the moons of Ultima Thule. Thank you. And now the next speaker is Leslie Young.
Thank you, Mark. So I'm on the atmospheres team for New Horizons, and I want to remind you of the summer of 2015, good times, when we flew past Pluto. It has a thin atmosphere. It's about almost a million times thinner than the Earth's atmosphere. It's like being up in our stratosphere. But it's very extended. The top of the atmosphere that we were able to measure at Pluto is about a Pluto radius above the surface. And we could measure the atmosphere at Pluto very easily with the ultraviolet spectrometer ALICE and with our plasma instruments. The extent of the atmosphere on Pluto is about as wide as the entire of the United States. And again, for scale, the United States is about the distance that we flew from Ultima Thule, our target from last New Year's Eve. Ultima Thule itself is very small, only about 20 miles across. We don't expect to see a slowdown of the solar wind the way we did at Pluto. We expect to have Ultima Thule just block the solar wind. We don't expect to be seeing any atmosphere coming off of the solar wind to detect dust, but spacecraft missions, it's all about exploration. So you gotta try. We're only flying past Ultima Thule once. So we looked with everything we had. This shows the spacecraft as it flies past Ultima Thule, turning the antenna and the solar occultation channel of the ultraviolet instrument, ALICE, back toward the Earth to, for instance, watch the sun as it gets filtered through an atmosphere around Ultima Thule, if there is one there to see. So here it is, just a couple days after we flew back, we have down on the ground some of our atmospheric dust and plasma data. We have a couple hours of data from the ultraviolet instrument staring at Ultima Thule. We have a few hours also from the plasma instruments. We have about a day's worth of data from the dust camera. We looked back at Ultima Thule with our imagers, with MVIC and LORI. Those are not going to come back for a few weeks, but when they do, we will look to see if we see dust entrained in the coma the way you might see it on an outburst from a comet. So we're looking forward to this data, and even if we don't detect any atmosphere or plasma or dust, these are very important measurements because Ultima Thule is there exposed to impacts from its environment, from the energetic particles from the plasma of the solar wind, from the energetic photons in the ultraviolet, and that affects its surface. You've heard earlier in the week that the surface of Ultima Thule is dark and red, and the secret to the processing of this body and other bodies like it is probably going to lie in the plasma, energetic particle, and ultraviolet environment. And to tell us more about the color, I turn to my colleague, Sylvia.
Thank you, Leslie. Beyond the orbit of Neptune resides a population of objects, the Kuiper Belt objects, up to 50 astronomical units from the Sun. The called classical Kuiper Belt objects are a particular kind or dynamical class because they reside in a tight ring or near circular, low inclined orbits. We believe that this dynamical aspect of called classical Kuiper Belt objects is due to the fact that these objects were not perturbed by the giant planets, contrary to other dynamical classes in the Kuiper Belt. So the term cold does not refer to temperature, although these objects are very cold, but instead refers to the primitive aspect of this population. Cold classical Kuiper Belt objects are relatively redder than the rest of the population. And it displays an average color that falls well within the average colors displayed by the cold classical Kuiper Belt objects. This implies that Ultima Thule is well representing this dynamical class, this population of objects that are primitive. And therefore, the detailed measurements that we will perform in the next weeks, months, years, will provide the context for understanding the composition and formation of these objects. Quantitative analysis of the color of this image indicates that the average color of Ultima and Thule, the two components of this bilobed object, present the same average color. This tells us something important about the formation of this object. In particular, we believe that this object is a contact binary resulting from the merger of two objects formed close by to each other in the protoplanetary disk. This is supported by the evidence obtained with the ground and space-based measurements of binary systems in the Kuiper Belt. In particular, what we have found so far is that the primary and secondary component of binary systems in the Kuiper Belt present the same color, therefore supporting our theory of the formation of this object. And with this, I will hand it to my colleague, Paul Schenk.
Thank you, Sylvia. One of the main objectives for New Horizons at Ultima Thule is to determine not only the shape and size of this body, but also the relief of geologic features on its surface. And in order to do that, we needed to acquire resolved stereo images of the surface. The two images have resolutions of about 300 meters and 140 meters, respectively, and do not have a lot of stereo parallax, but they definitely reveal the basic shape of Ultima Thule, and they do indicate that the prospects are very good for the planned stereo observations that we have coming down in the weeks to come. Now, you see a bunch of things, how narrow the neck is between the two bodies. You also get a sense, at least, that the bright material may be concentrated in topographic lows, and this may indicate downslope movement of material from topographic highs such as ridges. And there's an indication that the dark, stripy materials that we see may actually be topographic ridges as well. So we can't really wait to receive the final images in order to determine whether this is, in fact, the proper interpretation. We do need to be careful about interpreting images like this because these are basically equivalent to full moon images that we see from our Earth, where shadows and textures are washed out and we see albedo variations. So some of these markings could be ridges, but we won't know for sure until the subsequent images are downloaded. The very best images, Ultima Thule, should in fact basically fill the camera frame. So it should be very interesting indeed.
And we will have to wait a little while for those images because New Horizons at present is passing on the other side of the Sun from us here on the Earth. You heard reference there to some stereo photography. Well, Brian May is a project, well, He's a participating scientist on the mission. Brian is an astrophysicist, and he did those pictures. And Brian has another skill as well. He is the guitarist for a band known as Queen. Yes, yeah, Queen. Well, here he explains how he wrote a song that we played on last week's The Space Show. And he was speaking on December the 31st, just at the premiere of the song, the world premiere of the song, how he came by the concept of the song for New Horizons.
Alan called me about 5 months ago and said, can I call you on something? So I thought, it's got to be something important. He's calling me to see if he can call me. And he said, can you make some music for the Ultima Thule flyby? And I thought, this is probably going to be hard because I can't think of anything that rhymes with Ultima Thule at this moment. So I had this doubt in my mind, but then I went away and the thing started to buzz around in my head and I could hear some music of some kind. I could hear some music of an object plummeting through space faster than anything's ever been launched away from this Earth. And I got kind of inspired, but I didn't really have the lyric. But gradually it dawned on me that this mission is about human curiosity. It's about the need of mankind to go out there and explore and discover what makes the universe tick. And this has been going on since the dawn of time. So in a sense, my song, my track, my anthem became about the human spirit endeavoring to discover the universe. So with that in mind, I went out to dinner with another very old friend of mine, Don Black. I don't know if you know who Don is, but he's a very iconic lyricist. He's worked with all kinds of people way back into history, including Andrew Lloyd Webber. And he wrote Born Free, which is an iconic song about nature and the way we're screwing it up. Very, very forward-looking song, really. But I went out to dinner with him and explained what I was doing. He got very inspired, and he said, oh, this is really interesting. You know, maybe I can offer you something. So I go home. The next morning, I wake up, and in my email box is a little email from Don Black with two very simple verses as ideas for the beginnings of this song. So at that point, I was inspired. I was kicked into action. They're very simple. The idea is, I think the best ideas are always simple, you know. So what he gave me was new horizons to explore, new horizons. I forgot what it is now. New horizons that we've never seen before. Now, that sounds very simple, and I thought, I don't know if that's really going to express what I'm going to say. But I started to kind of move around that, and it became the song that I wanted to write with Don. So this is a song which is an anthem to human endeavor, if you like.
New Horizons participating scientist Brian May. And this composition, which we're going to play again this week, is actually under his own name, as Brian May, rather than under the name of Queen. Queen did Galileo, 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 which we used to use as a theme for the Galileo mission way back when on the Space Show. Anyway, here is the official release of New Horizons by Brian May.
T-minus 15 seconds.
Ready? Roger.
15 seconds.
11. 10. 9. 8. 7. 6. 5. 4. 3, 2. We have lift off of NASA's New Horizons spacecraft.
The revelations of New Horizons may help us to understand better how our solar system was formed.
New Horizons.
That was Brian May's New Horizons, his first single in a long, long time. Now, Jay hadn't heard that previously. Jay, what did you think?
I actually didn't know that Brian May was even on the New Horizons crew. I didn't even know he was a scientist of this scale. And I wish we had more singers in the space industry. That way I wouldn't have to listen to endless iterations of Telstar all over again. I would much rather listen to that. And as far as actual music go, I did really enjoy it.
Okay.
Southern FM. The sounds of the Bayside.
Well, you're listening to The Space Show with Andrew and Jay.
Hi, this is Mark Holden, and you're listening to 88.3 Southern FM.
On last week's The Space Show, we played a song by Craig Wirth. He'd written a song about the New Horizons mission to Ultima Thule, and he performed it. He did another performance there as well. This was a live solo performance at the Applied Physics Laboratory. It is introduced by the musician himself.
Hello, I'm Craig Wirth. I'm a singer-songwriter from New Hampshire and a big fan of science, of course, and New Horizons. And I did write that Pluto song, and then Alan asked me if I had an inspiration about the next leg of the mission, and I surely did. It's my job as an artist to compress all this science, which I don't fully understand, but I greatly appreciate, and the passion of people for discovery and for learning and understanding into a piece of art that touches hearts and minds. And with this song, which I'm going to invite you, unlike the Pluto song, this is a sing-along. So please, with whatever voice you have to offer, we could have 17 different notes, maybe 40 different notes. It's all good. This song is about amazement. We can look around our in our lives and find amazement at every turn. It's not hard to find amazement in something like this. And so this song is called I Am Amazed. And the refrain, I'm going to sing the refrain first so you hear it, and then I'll sing the song. Again, join me.
It is amazing, I am amazed. It is amazing, I am amazed. It is amazing, I am amazed.
The mission team sang it with me last month. More than 36 showed up to sing it after a long day. A volunteer, it shocked the heck out of me. We'll show that video tonight, but for now, let's join in.
It is amazing, I am amazed. It is amazing, I am amazed. It is amazing, I am amazed.
Beautiful. Isn't it amazing how we learn to leave the ground? Isn't it amazing? The firing up, the counting down. Isn't it amazing when we passionately turn to all we know and hope to learn?
It is amazing, I am amazed. It is amazing, I am amazed. It is amazing, I am amazed.
Isn't it amazing? All the ones who came before, isn't it amazing? How they've opened up the doors, isn't it amazing?
Every woman, every man, on whose dreams and work we stand. It is amazing, I am amazed. It is amazing, I am amazed. It is amazing, I am amazed.
Isn't it amazing? Oh, the science and the art. Isn't it amazing to catch the view of Pluto's heart? Isn't it amazing? The wing our spirit flies on,
toward all these new horizons. It is amazing, I am amazed. It is amazing, I am amazed. It is amazing, I am amazed. Isn't it amazing? All this wonder that we share, isn't it amazing? How it reaches way out there, isn't it amazing? When we engage community, we can reach ultimately. It's amazing. It is amazing, I am amazed. It is amazing, I am amazed. It is amazing, I am amazed. One more time. It is amazing, I am amazed. It is amazing, I am amazed. It is amazing, I am amazed. Thank you. Thank you very much.
And we're going to hear now from Kathy Olkin, Deputy Project Scientist at the Southwest Research Institute in Boulder, Colorado, on the science objectives of the New Horizons flyby of Ultima Thule.
I just want to tell you a little bit about our science objectives. And there's many things that we can see with the spacecraft that there's no way to tell from our ground-based and orbiting telescopes. And that's things like what the geology and the shape of Ultima looks like. We're really interested in understanding the craters on Ultima. This is a way of looking at the other Kuiper Belt objects out there and understanding things that have impacted Ultima in the past. So it's a way of looking at objects that we can't see with our telescopes because they're too small and too faint, and understanding the evolution of the solar system. We're also interested in understanding the color and the composition. What is the surface made out of? What is the nature of Ultima? And we don't have any answers today, but we're going to learn so much as we fly by. Having a spacecraft in the outer solar system, having the opportunity to see this type of object for the first time ever is historic. When we look at Ultima, we're not sure what it's going to look like. We don't know whether it's one object or two, or whether it is what we call a contact binary, so it's two objects kind of stuck together, or if it's potato-shaped or lumpy. We don't believe it's round. So we're starting to see these clues in the data, in the imagery that we're getting down, but we still have outstanding questions, and luckily I'm looking forward to answering some of these in this week.
And so now we know it is a contact binary.